For April 7th, 2016, it's the Lullabot Podcast. Hey everybody, it's the Lullabot Podcast. It's episode 184. I'm Matt Cleave, a senior developer with Lullabot. With me, I have Mike Herschel, a front-end dev. Hi, Mike.
Good afternoon. I'm Matthew Cleave.
Hello, Michael Herschel. Hey, last time we talked about DrupalCon New Orleans, and some of the talk was about the sessions that were selected. One of those sessions caught our eye today. What are we talking about?
Selling Drupal modules, paid products for Drupal.
Yeah, selling Drupal modules and distributions. It's a session that will be given at DrupalCon New Orleans, and it's always one that brings a lot of interest from the Drupal community. Definitely some strong opinions, and you know, people want to see what there is to know about it, right?
Absolutely.
So we got some of the smartest people together, and we're going to have that discussion today. First, I suppose we should get the guy who's going to be giving that session at DrupalCon New Orleans. His name is Taco Poza, but he tells me that we can just call him Taco, because apparently, yeah, that works. He's the founding partner of Goal Gorilla. He's a board member of the Dutch Drupal Association and has been an organizer for Drupal Jam and the Splash Awards. He hails from the Netherlands and is the... Taco, are you a founder of the Yoast SEO modules for Drupal and Drupal Social Distro?
Founder sounds a bit heavy, I guess.
Okay.
We are building it.
You're building. Okay, great. Hi. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
Secondly, we have Robert Douglas, the VP of Customer Success at Platform SH. He's formerly Commerce Guys, Acquia, and a Lullabot. He's actually appeared on Drupal Voices podcast about 5 years ago talking about the Drupal App Store and new revenue streams. We'll link to that in our show notes. He's been on Drupal.org even longer than Jeff Eaton, over 12 years. And this is kind of cool. According to Drupal.org, he has exactly 1,000 commit credits throughout the various projects, which means that he cannot go over because that would spoil it.
He's the guy who knows when to quit.
Yeah. Lives in Cone, Germany. Robert Douglas, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be back on the Lullabot Podcast.
We need a couple of smart Lullabots, too, because we couldn't have a Lullabot Podcast without bringing on someone like Matthew Tift to talk about this topic. Dr. Matthew Tift, he's a senior Lullabot developer, co-maintainer of the D8 configuration system. He hails from Minneapolis, Minnesota. He's a kind of guy that's very passionate about open source. And the Drupal community, host of the Hacking Culture podcast. He will write an article for the Lullabot blog called Why Paid Drupal Modules Fail, Drupal is Art. Hi, Matthew.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming back on the Lullabot podcast.
Next, we have up a senior architect here at Lullabot. He's been heavily involved with Drupal since 2006, as started the D8 CMI initiative, and I saw that line there, and it's like I'm saying configuration management initiative. This person is a world-class pinball player and volunteers his time for a pinball charity, the Pinball Outreach Project, and he's interested in the idea of selling Drupal modules and treats the typical arguments with skepticism. Hails from Portland, Oregon. Welcome, Greg Dunlap.
Hi, Greg.
Hey. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, you and Matthew Tift were both on together just a month or so ago, right?
Yeah, it's true. It was interesting. You mentioned that we needed a couple of smart Lullabots for this podcast, and I was like, yeah, you've got Matthew and Eaton, and then you just threw me in the mix.
Well,
too.
You know. Thanks for coming.
Sure.
So we'll also bring along the senior digital strategist at Lullabot. He's the guy that puts the G in GPL. He's the host of the Insert Content Here podcast. He's been on Drupal.org for over 11 years, has commit credit for a wide range of Drupal modules. He hails all the way from Geneva, Illinois, and is best known for hosting DrupalCon Trivia Nights and Drupal Execute. Hi, Jeff Eaton.
Wow, that is that's a heck of a resume right there. It's great to be here. I'm super excited about it. I've actually got a client who's in the process of working through a bunch of these questions with a new project they're embarking on. So it's a really interesting topic.
Talking about selling Drupal modules and distributions, it's something that comes up every few years. Just I guess from the background, talk of the Drupal App Store happened a few years ago. Robert, you were involved in that discussion, if I remember correctly. There's also been, you know, people selling Drupal modules. There was a site called MoneyScripts, I remember, from a while back. So bringing this back up again. Going to have some good discussion. Taco, if you don't mind taking me through the 30,000 foot view of what you're going to talk about at DrupalCon and just kind of your thoughts.
Yeah, sure. So we know Yoast of Elk, the creator of the Yoast SEO module, I should say plugin for WordPress, for quite some years now, and we've seen his company grow from just him by himself starting out with the plugin to 30 guys, of which 10 developers are currently working on the plugin.
And explain to me what the Yoast plugin is. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, so it's one of the top 5 modules on plugins or WordPress. I'm going to make this mistake a lot today. top 5 plugins. Basically, what the core of the plugin is a text analyzer. So as you create content, it gives you advice how to optimize your content for better SEO rankings in Google, for example. It's something that we don't have in Drupal yet. And we've been working with Yoast for the last couple of months to make the plugin available as a Drupal module in Drupal 7 and Drupal 8. And the next thing is that we want to bring out a paid module, as Yoast also does in the WordPress community. So that's one thing. The other thing we're doing is working on a distribution. It's going to be the replacement of Drupal Commons. It's going to be called Drupal Social, and this is basically a complete rebuild of Commons. It's going to be awesome. We're working with 10, 11 guys on it right now. It will be launched in June, and we're also looking at commercial models, commercial business models for this distribution as well. And that's where we are here today, and that's why I submitted my talk for the DrupalCon to talk about this very important issue in the Drupal community.
Awesome. And just for clarity, the Yoast plugin for WordPress, you said there's a free version and then there's a paid version.
Yeah.
What's the difference? What's it cost? Like, how does it work?
So the main difference is support.
Okay.
You will get support. There is a 24/7 support line you can call or email, I should say. And then there's a second line of the actual WordPress developers at Yoast that will help you out if you have any questions on SEO or on the plugin or anything. This module costs $69 a year, a site. And they offer also different modules. For example, a Google Analytics module is a module they have for WordPress. And they also bundle these. And then it would cost, if you would take all their modules, $279 a year a site. So that's basically their model, and they also have all the source code available on their github.com/Yoast. So all code is available open source.
So the code is out there, and it doesn't matter if you pay for it or not, you get the same code, but what you do get is support. That's what I'm hearing?
Yes, and they do have some extra features in the premium SEO plugin at the moment, but mainly, what Yoast tells me is mainly people take it to get support for their plugins. And currently, they have about 5 million active installations. That is 5 times more than there are Drupal sites. And I cannot tell you how much paying installations they have, because that's kind of the secret.
Sure.
But you can assume it's a lot, and it pays for a staff of 30 people to be working only on improving these modules and talk to the community about making these modules better.
Is this the same business model that you're going to do with Drupal?
Yes. So it will be mainly about support for the module.
Gotcha. And the code is going to be GPL. Is going to continue to be GPL, correct?
Yes. We're very firm in it.
Yeah, that's going to be up on GitHub, I'm assuming, also?
Yeah.
Gotcha. So what problem does paid Drupal module solve?
So my main issue is that, and my main point is that currently we cannot innovate fast enough in the Drupal community. So when you look at what Yoast and his team are doing, we could never do this currently, and we haven't been doing it currently. So that's the reason there is not a good SEO module for Drupal, and it's the reason why people think that Drupal is very bad for SEO. And actually that's why we, and I personally have lost pitches, because clients are very much keen on having good SEO, and Yoast plugin is one of the reasons that WordPress is very good at SEO and is perceived also by clients much better at SEO. So for me, it's very concerning that because you know we want to push Drupal forward, we are working day in, day out with Drupal, we want to make it the best platform out there, that we cannot have by far 10 developers working on one plugin. Can you imagine if we could do this in a Drupal community, what kind of innovations we could achieve? And that's something that concerns me a great deal, and that's why I'm looking at their model to implement for a Drupal module as well.
Jeff Eaton here. I'm curious. Do you know if the developers that they use Yoast plugin have a lot of situations where people like just give away the copies of their plugin? Are there features that like get unlocked or things like that beyond the beyond just the support services and stuff like that? Because I think that ends up being the real sticking point for a lot of tangly GPL questions. Like if the service that's being sold is really just support and ongoing attention, it's fairly straightforward and uncontroversial. It's this, what if I, is the code itself locked down? Can you give away the full version of the module?
Yeah, so at Yoast, his philosophy is always GPL. So anything they build, even if it's a feature for the premium plugin, I know that they, for example, add sitemap functionality to the premium module. I don't honestly know why they would do this because, it's not really so special, but again, the main reason that people pay for the services is the support that they get. And even some companies, they say they have a policy that, okay, we can only use certain module if there is support delivered, if we can guarantee support, so they actually have to pay for them as well. And this is something that we are very, it's not used in the Drupal community, and I really want to know why this is not being used. But my main reason is that I think that currently we are missing out in the Drupal community in innovations. And we have the Yoast module, but I also want to look at, for example, why Drupal Commons is not being continued, why there's no sustainable model for continuing a distribution in Drupal. And it concerns me a great deal that we still haven't found out a way of doing this, and it hurts us.
Yeah, to me it comes down to almost like the audience. I don't know too much about WordPress, but I assume that their audience is a lot less technically minded, and so someone that can just download through the WordPress GUI a plugin, install it, and then doing a lot of automatically upgrade it, that's a lot easier than, say, like cloning a GitHub repo or downloading a zip file, throwing it directly into the plugins directory or whatever needs to be done, and then go ahead and enabling it. But your standard Drupal developer is already used to that workflow. That's something that they're going to, I would assume, like a standard Drupal developer is going to know enough, like, hey, this is up on GitHub or Drupal.org. Let's just download it and do it. And I think that could be a potential issue that you're running into.
I Jeff Eaton again here. He just stage hook me off the podcast whenever I talk too much. But I have worked on a couple of, small to mid-sized WordPress projects, and I've talked to a lot of people in the WordPress community trying to figure out some of these things. I don't necessarily think that it's a matter of skill level in terms of, how that differs, but I do think there's a really big, sort of architectural, cultural difference between Drupal and WordPress. In the WordPress community, it's a lot more common to have a very, very small number of plugins on a given WordPress site, and for the theme to basically be the traffic cop for everything. The theme occupies the role we would almost call like a distribution in Drupal. And what that means is that the work of making a highly customized, sort of reproducible turnkey WordPress package for a given vertical, like, say, wedding sites or, dentists sites or something like that, there are way fewer moving parts to that. instead of integrating 100 to 150 different small components that are different contrib modules and sort of tying them all together with configuration and glue code the way we do in Drupal, that might be 5, maybe 10 larger, more monolithic modules on the WordPress side with a custom theme sort of wraps the majority of the functionality. And I could be wrong, but I think that is one of the big historical and architectural reasons why a distribution in WordPress, you can own a lot more of the complexity for it rather than having to sort of play traffic cop for 100 different submodules. And it's bred a different kind of solution, I think.
Yeah, and I think honestly, just from what I know of WordPress, that's the big draw. It's a lot easier for someone to come into WordPress and say, like, hey, I want to create a real estate website. I'm just going to create I'm just going to pay, you know, X amount of dollars for this real estate plugin. So I automatically create all my fields. It's going to get me probably 99% of the way there, and the other 1% I could just deal with. With Drupal, you would have to have that knowledge to come in. You would have to build it out of the box. You would have to create your content types, create your fields, maybe download some, you know, if you want to download any type of like geolocation modules, you would have to get those. You would have to configure those. You would have to integrate that within views. You'd have to build the views. At that point, you would have to create your view modes. You would have to theme your view modes, all that type of stuff. That's a huge burden as opposed to just, you know, paying X amount of dollars for a couple hundred dollars for a module and just kind of get your site going. But that being said, you know, one of the benefits of doing it the Drupal way is that you can customize it however you want. You know, you're not tied into one particular, you know, vendor's way of doing things. And another thing that I wanted to bring up on this podcast is the fact that, you know, Drupal, like, historically builds off of each another's work. You know, like, for example, when, you know, Merlin of Chaos created the views module and panels module, you had this ecosystem built up around that. You know, if you have, you know, Yoast SEO charging X amount of dollars, I would assume it would be less likely that you would have, you know, another developer who doesn't even personally know Yoast to create something that would maybe improve it or create, you know, a patch or a pull request on that or something like that. I might be completely wrong in that, but that would be my assumption. Can you speak to that?
I think Robert can say something about this later, but, you know, I don't want to go too deep into a WordPress versus Drupal discussion, but I really want to talk about the issues we have at Drupal and see, my fear is, and I'm going to do some research on this, I'm building a scraper to take out all the data from Drupal.org to look at the modules, because my fear is that there's a huge long tail of modules that we don't know about, that these guys cannot make ends, and why do we say this in English?
Ends meet.
It's so weird. and nobody knows about their modules, and nobody knows about the innovations. Why? Because they don't have money for marketing. They don't have money to create an audience for their module. So I want to talk about small guys out there that currently do not have a chance to bring their modules and their innovations under our attention or improve their innovations. So, but maybe Robert can say a little bit more about his idea on building upon other modules, and then I know also that Matthew has some big ideas about, you know, some of the issues we face in the Drupal community, and, you know, this is one of the proposed solutions, but I know that a lot of people are against paying for this and they see a lot of issues with it, so yeah, I'd really like to talk a bit more about that.
So, sure, thanks Taco and Robert here. I had a comment with the WordPress versus Drupal debate that was just happening. I'm not sure it's the main topic of this podcast, but I really think that Drupal is an excellent tool for building bespoke solutions where one site is nothing like another site that you might be doing, and that WordPress is probably a very good solution for sites that have very common sets of requirements, and that the productized plugins that they have are a good example of this. It's pretty certain that out of those 5 million users who are using the Yoast SEO plugin, they probably have within 99.9 percentile of each other the exact same requirements, and that module satisfies them. And I don't really think at that point it's very relevant whether somebody who's not on the Yoast team is making a patch. They've got a 10-developer team doing that for them. Why are my contributions important to that? Maybe I'll, you know, correct a spelling, or if I find a bug, I'll do it. But in the end, the longevity of the module or the plugin is secured through the payments that they're taking for the distribution and support of it.
So something that has come up in my mind, and I'm unfamiliar with the WordPress plugin itself, but if something is well built and works great enough for people to pay for it, what kind of support do they actually need?
I think there's a lot of support that's needed in terms of using a tool for a particular use case. And this is true for software in general. I just bought a DAW, which is a audio editing console for my laptop. And I bought a 6-month support contract so that I could ask questions about how to get certain tasks done. The product is not flawed because I have those questions or can't find the answers. It's just that the task is monumentally complex. So the types of support that you might ask for are very focused on the expertise, in this case, of SEO. Maybe the Yoast team knows more about achieving good SEO than you do as a customer, and maybe they know how to apply the software best to that task in ways that you might not think of.
So is that an SEO consultant as opposed to software support?
Well, you can call it whatever you want, but what you're paying for is the access to that knowledge.
Sure.
And just look at the open issues in some of the module queues that are currently open. So, for example, Fuse has 4,000 open issues. And this is not all of them are bugs. Like, half of them are marked as bugs, which is still a lot. But there's a lot of questions and change requests and feature updates. So we do have a lot of questions in the Drupal community about all of our modules that we do not have the time to answer and respond to. So, you know.
And there's one big gorilla in the room who's actually taking quite a lot of money specifically for support, which is their main product, and that's Acquia. So maybe that business model actually just works and there's only one company who's figured it out.
I mean, I think almost every Drupal shop that builds custom sites for their customers has some form of support contract. I would probably argue that that is similar to a fair number of the... I mean, that's the level at which a lot of these small WordPress custom distributions operate. Like, I know of a couple of shops that have basically built up their own custom distributions of Drupal, and they handle the hosting themselves. What they do is, you know, they manage like the Acquia accounts and stuff like that, and they basically build out these sites using a turnkey system. It's not quite the same as selling a plugin or a module or something like that, but this sort of whole sphere of figuring out how the work that gets put into creating a thing that has value in the Drupal world gets remunerated. There are a lot of different solutions to that. And I think this idea of having, you know, of tying that to the module level of functionality, how we think of that in the Drupal world, like this is a module that provides feature X for sites, and I'm going to sell that. It's just that that particular axis is not one that we've done very much of in the Drupal world.
You're right, Jeff. That's the whole selling a module is a white herring.
Yeah.
Or is it a red herring?
It's a herring of some sort. But yeah, I mean, I don't think it's necessarily the legal repercussions, as long as somebody isn't trying to, like, obfuscate the code or lock it down or prevent people from, like, literally sharing a snippet of PHP from the module or something like that. It's that we're just not used to what it even means to have services or support or, you know, some sort of payment mechanism attached to that granularity of function.
Yeah, maybe to that effect, a better example, if we want to broaden the scope of the discussion, would be one of the companies that does a dual licensing of their core product, such as Magento. I worked for a company called Commerce Guys until they, you know, turned into Platform SH, but my time spent there was competing with Magento, and it was very difficult because they had so much engineering power to put towards their core product. in which they distribute under a community edition, which is open source, and an enterprise edition, which is something that you pay a lot of money to download and to use. And that works out very well for them. That means that they have a large number of people drawn to the product to use it as an open source project, who then graduate onto an enterprise license when the requirements push them into the so-called upsell. And that means that the software is really good. I mean, you can debate that separately. If you don't like Magento, that's fine, but they're actually the dominant e-commerce software for PHP, so that can't be argued with.
I guess I'm listening to this conversation, and I being Matthew Tift, and I've noticed that to this point, a lot of the discussion has focused on the business models and looking at different ways to make money with Drupal or WordPress or Magento. And I think there are probably a lot of people involved in the Drupal community who don't view getting paid for their time or their effort as their primary motivator for being involved, and maybe they're just using Drupal for other reasons. So I think it really depends on how you look at the problems that need to be solved and how the community operates to talk about what sort of solution we actually need to provide, because I think there is in technology in general a tendency to look at all kinds of problems as problems that need solutions without necessarily looking really closely at what the problem is we want to solve. And there's a technology critic named Evgeny Morozov who talks about this, and he describes it as a solutionism, where you're presuming rather than investigating a problem. So I guess I was curious to hear more about why how a paid module or a service that's substituting for software solves a problem, or what problem that is that we're even trying to solve.
I've actually got a really good response to that. There's been a lot of discussion recently. Ash Redden wrote a thing called The Ethics of Unpaid Labor that's about open source software and about how it's really a symptom of privilege that you can actually work on something for free and spend a dedicated amount of your time on it. And, you know, we talk a lot about how Drupal and open source and stuff about you know, people working because they care and because they're passionate and because they want to be a part of the community. But there are a lot of people who feel that way who don't actually have the resources to make that happen. And in particular, those people tend to come from disadvantaged communities, because, you know, women who tend over you know, the greater sphere to be homeowners, to be managing their families, people who might have to work multiple jobs. It really reduces the diversity in our community to say that, you know, the whole goal and point of working on open source is to not get paid. And I'm trying to articulate what I'm trying to say, but, you know, I agree that you're right, and there's people who get into Drupal for different reasons, and I think that's one of the great things that we're discussing here, is that there are a lot of different ways to get at Drupal, but to say that it's somehow better or more idealistic or whatever to be going at it from the free side, from the donated side, I really feel that leaves a lot of people out of the equation.
Greg, I think you're talking to all the people in the world who would say, oh, it's my dream to be able to work on Drupal and to contribute to Drupal. Is that right?
Yes.
I've known a lot of people who fit that, myself included, when I could quit my horrible J job and go on to a Drupal job where I could write code for Drupal. It was a dream. And Matthew, I completely understand the artistic aspect and the self-fulfillment and personal fulfillment aspect of writing open source code and contributing it for no other reason than to make the world a better place. It's wonderful. I think that when we focus on the business models and the sustainability of these things, it's the exactly like Greg said, it's how do we extend that privilege to more and more people. And I think Taco's example started off with a point that he maybe understated, and that is that by using a model that brings ample remuneration for the software that's being distributed, whether it's actually paying for support or updates or something else, doesn't matter, it's bringing the money, they support a team of 30 people whose dream it might have been to contribute to open source, and they are.
I think it's I think one thing to remember here is that the software is also being given away for free, you know, and although it could be said that, you know, it might be a symptom of privilege to be able to work on software for free, you know, the same argument could say it might be a symptom of privilege to be able to pay for plugins to get your website up. You know, the fact that the Drupal's ecosystem gives away the full versions of modules for free without any types of barriers, can help out those same disadvantaged groups that you're talking about, you know, and although, you know, the software, you know, the Yoast SEO plugin might be GPL'd and up on WordPress, there's still some additional barriers to be able to download that to get it, and there's definitely that additional learning curve.
The other side of that is that over the years, Drupal has more and more been adopted by the enterprise, by extremely large companies, the vast majority of whom do not donate back to the project at all. As a matter of fact, when I was doing a fundraising drive, I was unemployed and went on a drive to fund my work on the configuration management initiative for Drupal 8. And when I approached many of these companies, you know, these are multi-billion-dollar companies, and I'm working on something that's going to save them, I mean, literally thousands of man hours in their development cycles, either their man hours or the man hours of the vendors that they're paying to work on their sites. And I couldn't get a dime out of them. And while you're right that Drupal being free does enable a lot of people who couldn't afford it to work on the sites, it also enables a lot of people who can very well afford it to not pay. And you know, I mean, I found it very difficult to work out in my mind the fact that I should be expected for nothing to donate tens of thousands of hours of my own time to build something that is going to save tens of thousands of man hours for free.
Here's a question, and I think Matt, I think this may hit on an aspect of what you're talking about. Matt Tift, but I think this just occurred to me as you were talking about this, Greg. One of the things that we find is once you move into businesses that are paying for services or that are in some way investing something other than their personal time in creating things, they're budgeting, they're putting staffing resources, they're hiring people, stuff like that, the actual money that gets spent in those kinds of projects is the equivalent of like going to the grocery store with a pile of cash in hand. You know, the whole idea of long-term cultivating and investing and building a module, but then the actual module is free. All the functionality is free, but there's a huge amount of time that's gone into cultivating it, is more like long-term gardening, you know, the creation of like a public garden or like, you know, open farming in the middle of a city or something like that. The organizations that have resources tend to come in because they need something at a particular time and they need it to be done and they have a budget for it. They aren't in a position to say, we would like to get into farming. They need produce. And I think one of the challenges is when those opportunities come, and especially once something reaches a level of success and a level of value and a level of polish, that people who are coming and looking for those kinds of things start arriving there and saying, this is what I want. Like, I would like Drupal, because now it is at a level where it is no longer something that hobbyists tinker with, but I would like to build my large corporate site on it. Those people, they want that. Like, they want to come in and have their budget and take it, not necessarily invest in the process of becoming a gardener. And figuring out ways of allowing the you know, allowing the investment to shift. Like it's like, you know, moving things to CapEx budget, you know, in large enterprise projects. If you can figure out a way that those organizations can invest, you know, in their one shot when it's needed, there's a whole world of opportunities to basically keep those people fed, you know, keep the people who are working on it fed that otherwise would be very difficult to work out.
No, I totally get that. And, you know, one of the things I heard over and over when I approached these companies was we can't spend a ton of money now on something we're not going to see payoff for 3 years. And, you know, my way to respond to that was I started taking my pitches to companies like hosting companies, which are more product-focused and thus more long-term investment-based in general, and I had a lot more success doing that. But it's also hard, you know, for me to think, you know, I get it from a political and budgeting and corporate standpoint, all of the things that you're saying, and I understand that they're not used to thinking that way. But on the other hand, I would love to see some adjustment of that, especially when you're building an entire platform on a piece of software that, you know, you're going to be putting forth thousands of TV shows or recording artists or whatever it is. That's like, you know, the major marketing platform for your entire operation. I would like to see them be thinking about it a little more investment-wise. And again, I understand the corporate culture and politics and budgeting and all of that stuff, but still, on my side, again, it was very difficult for me to come up with a way to square with myself the time I was spending and the way that that contribution was going to be used.
I think it's interesting, the two examples that you brought up, Greg. The first one talking about finding a way to make the community more inclusive, and the second one being how to satisfy the needs of the client. And the point I was trying to make earlier was simply that if we're using Drupal as a solution, a technical solution to a problem of a company needing to make money, I think we go about it very differently than if we view Drupal as a community of individuals participating that are working together on something that everyone uses, and we're not trying to determine the proper method or the most beneficial method for creating revenue, but we're trying to grow a community and make it more inclusive. And in my view, I'm not sure that the existence of paid modules makes the community more inclusive.
That's an interesting point, Matthew. My perspective on the development of the Drupal community is that it started out in a protected atmosphere where a lot of people were working on it as part of their college, as a side project. Jeff Eaton, did you ever try and do a side project on Drupal? I think you did. I know I did. Where the time was kind of carved out and protected. Didn't have to be paid for. It was a passion project. And that once we got working together and once we got our hooks into the software, once we started having events and knowing who we were as a community, we started actively looking for ways to promote and protect that atmosphere. We started actively cultivating commercial models to build companies around so that we could hire people to do Drupal as a means to itself, as the actual goal for building a company was that so that we could work on Drupal more. And I know a lot of people who went into their business side of their Drupal careers trying to protect the actual idealistic, participatory, free software, free culture values that you're putting forward, Matthew. And therefore, I think it's very much in our best interest to think about the symbiosis of our business models in the light of that goal. How do we protect Drupal as an incredible achievement of human cooperation, which it is? And that's possibly the answer to why paid modules have never caught on, or, you know, paid support contracts or whatever you're actually selling when you sell Yoast. It's probably not just the privilege to download. It's the most important thing is the long-term relationship to your software vendor. Maybe it's because that seems counter in some way to some people to the goals of protecting this participatory environment. I'm not so certain that it's counter to it, but maybe it is.
We are talking about selling Drupal modules and distributions with Taco Pozza. Taco Pozza? Gosh, that's hard to say. He's the founding partner of Goal Gorilla. We also have Robert Douglas, the VP of Customer Success from Platform SH on the line, as well as a host of Lullabots. We got more coming up right after this. It's senior developer and trainer Blake Hall from Drupalize Me. How are you doing?
Good.
So you just wrote a blog post talking about some of the latest releases in the Drupal 8 theming course on Drupalize Me.
I did, yeah. Last week, I think it was, we came out with three new tutorials on Backbone.js, Underscore.js, and Modernizer.js.
Some of these JavaScript frameworks are kind of near and dear to your heart through your history, right? Kind of some projects you've worked on?
Yeah. These three in particular aren't ones that I have necessarily a ton of experience with, but it's what Drupal 8 core provides. So I feel like as we're trying to work on improving the content administrator experience and content authoring experience, we should probably learn them a bit better and try and make use of what we've got since that's what's in core.
What did you find?
There's not a whole lot of use of Backbone yet. I'm really excited to see what Contrib and custom themes are going to do with it. Right now, it's basically just being used for the admin toolbar and the quick edit module. And I think there's actually a lot of there are a lot of places we could take advantage of it and make use of it to sort of improve things in 8.1 or 8.2 or sort of incremental releases without needing to adopt an entirely new framework.
So that's now a part of the Drupal 8 theme guide, which I'm told is more and more comprehensive every day.
It is, yeah. Half of our trainer team is working on getting that finished up. I've got five more JavaScript-related tutorials that should be published sometime around, between now and DrupalCon. And I know Amber's working on some stuff around theme settings and responsive images.
And DrupalCon, you'll be there.
We will, yeah. Our whole team's actually coming down, so it should be a good time.
I've heard rumblings about a Migrate series coming for Drupalize Me. Have you been involved in any of that?
I haven't, but the other half of our trainer team, Will and Joe, are hard at work on getting the Migrate series out the door. I know one of the things that's sort of put a little bit of that on hold is there's a pretty big change that's coming in 8.1. That changes the way actual custom migrations work. So we're sort of waiting for that to land. And Will's been hard at work on some core patches, actually, to try to move that effort along a bit more. But that the Migrate guide is going to be the next big one to land after or in addition to theming.
I, for one, am glad that you guys are on top of that, because that's going to be a super important thing for Lullabot and everyone, you know, client projects coming in the future. Drupal 8 will be great, but people have content on their website already, so getting it into their Drupal 8 website is super important.
Definitely. And I think migration is one of those topics that for a lot of people seems a bit like a black box and kind of confusing. So as much help as we can provide to sort of empower people to make decisions about and then actually execute their migrations, the better.
And all the while, the Masters is on this week, and baseball is getting started. That's exciting for you and me.
It is. It is. And it's hockey tournament time, too. So the NHL playoffs get started. So
it's Blake Hall season.
As a sports nerd, this is a good time of year.
Awesome, Blake. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too.
Welcome back. You're on the Lullabot podcast, episode 184. We're talking about selling Drupal modules. And so as a follow-up to our previous questions, we're going to move on to distributions and opportunities for Drupal distributions. But I have a follow-up question for Robert and maybe Taco. What would you like the Drupal module ecosystem to look like in an ideal world?
Robert, you want to take this one?
Oh, I can try, sure. So I'm totally happy with the Drupal module ecosystem the way it is, and I think that focusing on modules or themes or any micro element of the way that we currently do Drupal websites is actually not where you want to put your attention. As I was saying before the break, I think the right place to put your attention is how can we create an economically sustainable environment for the people who want to continue to work within and culture the nurture the culture of participation, which is what we call the Drupal community. And to that end, I want everybody involved who wants to be involved to make a good living and to be happy with the work they're doing. And I want everybody who wants it to be able to access great software for building websites. So the better question is, how can we make sure that everybody's getting paid well and we're making plenty of money doing Drupal? That would be the question I'd ask.
That's a good question. I am all for that too. Obviously.
And to be fair, there are a lot of, you know, Drupal agencies that do work with Drupal, build Drupal websites, and they've found a way to get paid.
Yeah, and that's a very easy and obvious way, and that's the way a lot of people transition into from being a hobby Drupalist to a professional Drupalist, as they start getting paid to do what they'd been doing for their side project or as a passion project, they start getting paid to do that for other people. If we list the other ways that people get paid for Drupal, they get paid to host it, they get paid to teach about it, they get paid to write about it, they get paid for customizations. But there are even more financially interesting, perhaps, options that sometimes aren't explored as often. One of them is the software as a service variety, where you would actually use Drupal to build something that's a software as a service. And in fact, while there aren't a lot of pure software as a services that are built on Drupal natively, there are a lot of Drupal front ends to such services. So Drupal is involved in companies that do software as a service by all means. A software service being where you don't actually download any software, you interact with a server that's online somewhere to get some algorithmic or data access computing done that you may or may not pay for directly, doesn't matter, but it's delivered as a service as opposed to a software
or
download.
Or you get Drupal as a service, right? Isn't that kind of, Acquia played with Acquia Gardens and Lullabot was involved with Buzzer.
Yeah, absolutely. Two interesting attempts to do Drupal as a software as a service. And what's usually missing in an effort like that is the specialization and the focus, right? You have to know exactly which audience you're going for and what problem you're solving and how well you're solving it compared to the other options. And that's going to do a lot to decide whether you're successful or not. And I think that this discussion is very much geared towards, is there a model around the distribution of software as a downloadable good that I can use as a building block in my site building process? Is there a business model around that where we might tap into even more symbiotic, healthy support for building this larger community that we're doing? Or maybe I just want to be pure capitalist and say, can I make a shitload of money selling my software? I think that probably the answer is yes there. Maybe it's not the easiest or best way. Maybe the GPL doesn't support you as well as some other licenses, and maybe if you were actually going for a dual license system, you'd pick a different license. I don't know. But I think that there are some examples that are worth mentioning. So, you know, Taco recently raised a nice amount of money to work on a Drupal distribution. And there are some other companies that are doing interesting work with Drupal distributions. I'll call out a couple of them that we've got in the program notes that we prepared in advance. So there's a company called SO Media in Switzerland. They have a Drupal distribution for news portals called NP8. And they actually sell the distribution as a whole thing, and they sell it for a lot of money. Okay, so much money that it would make most people's toenails curl up if you heard how much it was. It's got lots of zeros on it. And it's GPL software. If one of their customers were to put it on the internet for free download, they'd be totally in their right to do that. None of their customers have done that. So you and I, unless we pay those sums of zeros, can't actually access the software, and that's all completely legally correct. And those customers who pay those sums of money have enabled SO Media to fund loads of core Drupal development and improvement on other component modules, especially in the lifecycle of Drupal 8, which we are all going to benefit from. So do I think that's a good thing? Yeah, I think that's a great thing. I'm glad SO Media did that. I'm glad those customers paid for it. I'm glad they're having success with it. And I'm glad that the people who did the work on NP8 contributed so many of their fixes back to Drupal Core. Excellent case study. It's a win-win situation for everybody. There are some other software as a service companies like Roomify who have built Drupal distributions, which you can A, download from Drupal.org, or B, buy access to through them. Buying access to the distribution through Roomify gives you advantages as a customer that you wouldn't necessarily get when you download the software from Drupal.org. For example, you get support from them, or you might get a hosted version of a Roomify site on infrastructure that they manage, or you might get customizations to that. These are all business models that the Roomify team have brought forward, and they have other business models too, but those are the ones pertaining to access to the code, and those business models help them contribute to Drupal and to promote free software. So I think those are a great thing.
Taco, do you want to talk a little bit about, you mentioned Drupal Social, a distro that you're working on?
Yeah, so what I see is that, yes, there are models to get paid, but sometimes in the community it's not enough. We wouldn't need the Drupal 8 module acceleration program if everybody had enough time to work on their modules and to port their modules. So for me, this is a symptom of something that's not wrong, not good at the moment. And what we've seen, for example, with Commons, so there's the Drupal Commons distribution built by Acquia, and in 2014 it was moving downwards in the Gartner Magic Quadrant, and Gartner wrote that there were concerns about whether the open source community will keep up with expectations in the market. And it hurts me a lot when I hear that Lilibot internally uses Jammer, a Microsoft product paid, instead of Drupal Commons. And I think we can call this the tragedy of the Drupal Commons instead of the tragedy of the Commons.
Because I could call it the tragedy of the Yammer.
Yeah.
Well done, Taco. Well done.
We have a joke about the Yammer rewrite extinguisher that needs to be brought anytime Lullabots get together, because we end up with the inclination to want to fix it.
Well, we might have a solution, because since Acquia stopped developing Commons for Drupal 8, we at GoldGorilla took on this job to create a new distribution called Drupal Social, which we're working on super hard now to get it ready in June for an alpha launch on Drupal.org to replace it. And we think we can do a better job than Acquia because, as Robert says, we are focused on building social communities. We've done this for Greenpeace International, with 40,000 volunteers worldwide, and we took a lot of these knowledge in these kinds of platform and put it back in the development of the distribution. But this is super costly. Half of our company is not making any billable hours at the moment, and it scares the shit out of me. But I cannot say this right on US podcast. But I'm Dutch, so you have to forgive me.
The FCC isn't watching our back. We'll be okay.
Oh, great.
Sorry,
okay.
Sorry, kids.
So, yes, go to bed now. So when Dries said in 2010, distributions can be very important for the success of Drupal, but we have to find out a way to make them sustainable. And it hurts me that Commons, with all its love that the community has put into it, is coming to an end, and it's not found a sustainable model. And I think, talking about modules is kind of difficult, but we can talk about distributions. And as Robert says, there are already a lot of examples of paid distributions out there. And for me, it would be very interesting to see, okay, how can we come up with a model that gives away these distributions back to the community, and not just the distribution, but we are already contributing on Drupal 8. We're working on the group module, making it better. So it's not just this distribution, but we can actually make the whole community benefit from these investments. But somehow, these investments is going to be up to 400,000 euros. That's almost dollars. So to make it super good. So we need to get that money back, obviously, And we need to find a way to to not make this a one-off project, but to do this over and over again, because we also need the revenue, not to become rich ourselves. You know, of course, we want to make have a normal living and raise our kids, etc. But it's, for me, it's not about raising money and swimming it like a dapper with duck, but it's to put it back in the product and making it better. And actually, if we want to compete with Jammer, we have to make it better than it's now, because currently, if you guys are choosing Jammer, how much other people are going to do this? And it's a shame, because we can actually do it with the community if we put our heads and minds to it.
So what's your plan? Where are you going to take Drupal Social?
So our ideal situation is that we can make an open SaaS version. We're very strict about this, so we're going to make a distribution. The alpha version will be ready in June. We'll put it on Drupal.org, but we've already organizations that come to us and that say, okay, we want a SaaS version because we don't want to have the hassle about updating Drupal. We want to do business with you guys. Every time you guys make an update, we want to have the new features installed and work with our customization or some integrations that we do on the distribution. So people are already asking for it, and for me, having a open SaaS project that I don't care if you want to download it and host it somewhere else and stop paying us, that's completely fine. Our open SaaS product should be so good that nobody would do this. And that would be our end goal. And we're putting all our blood, sweat, tears, and money that we earned working on Drupal the last years into making this a success. And we're very committed to doing so.
I thought I heard Robert say that you got some funding. Is this VC funded, or are you bootstrapping it? Or
we sold 10% of our shares of the GoGorilla company in a crowdfunding campaign. So we had 155 backers. And we raised 200,000 euros for this in 1 week.
Nice.
So this is also, I think, something that can be an example of how to raise money. Obviously, I can only tell you guys in a year if this was a very good decision or not. And probably we will have some ups and downs along the way. We will be super open about this because we do believe that with this money, we can actually make a Drupal better. And it's not about, I didn't sell these shares to buy a new car. I sold the shares to invest all of this money until the very last euro back into Drupal. And I don't know a lot of companies that do this. But we can only do this if we also get some sort of return on our investment. And that's why we're looking at business models that don't hurt the openness of the community, but does make the community sustainable and healthy.
I think the case that you brought up with Drupal Commons is an interesting one, because I have to say I don't know a lot about Drupal Commons, but it made me wonder, you know, immediately if, well, did all the people that built sites with Drupal Commons, will they still be able to have access to those sites when the service goes away?
Drupal Commons, Matthew, is a Drupal distribution that was 100% released on Drupal.org. It was built by Acquia. It was specifically designed by Jay Batson initially to fit a market need to compete with Jive software and other products like Yammer, and to be social enterprise social networking, which was perceived as a potential strength of Drupal that was at that time untapped. And I think you're absolutely right to be asking the question about what happens to Drupal Commons customers or users at a certain point in the product lifecycle, because Acquia is basically, as far as I understand, discontinued that product. So the main quote-unquote software vendor behind that product went away. Does that leave people in a lurch? Sure. Are they protected because it's open source? Yes. They can also go and find somebody else to maintain that or to customize it, or they can fix it themselves because of the software license. So that's an interesting thing. In terms of the hosted versions of that, I mean, Taco will have to answer the question for his own company, but even with the Drupal Gardens example that was brought up earlier, which is a completely hosted software as a service version of Drupal, the code that you're running is available for download. It is still GPL code, and you can export it at any time you want, and walk away with it. In fact, for a while at Acquia, it was a little bit of a fun thing to look at the web scanners that look at, like, builtwith.com, to look at the results of the scanners on the internet and see how many websites were actually built on exports of Drupal Gardens sites. So in all of these cases, we're talking about extremely superior customer experiences compared to with what you would consider software as a service as a software substitute. I think that's what Stallman calls it, something like that.
Yep.
In fact, I had the chance to pose that question to Richard Stallman himself with Dries in the room when we were launching at Acquia at the time, Drupal Gardens. I said, Mr. Stallman, if software as a service is such a dangerous thing, how would your mind be changed if you could always download the software that you're running and if it was GPL licensed? And he had never heard of such a thing at the time because it was actually a really new idea. I don't know, Taco. I think your customers would probably retain the option to download their software, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I think it's a strength, and it will be a selling point of our platform. And it's funny because it's actually the reason why we moved to crowdfunding. We talked to VCs, and every time we told them that our product would be free to download, and actually all our SaaS clients would be able to just download it and walk away, they were not interested in funding us. So it was a fun experience, and we actually got some offers that said we will fund you, but you have to make a closed source product. And obviously, we said no. This is not in our DNA, and we actually think that we can beat companies like Jammer by making it open source. It will be a USP. So definitely that. If it will be like, we will probably make some modules. And if it will be exactly the same, we're going to maintain one distribution at Drupal.org, and then our SaaS version will include some extra modules, like the Google Analytics modules, etc. So it will be easier for our SaaS clients, but it will not be heavy for the distribution client, people that want to use the distributions, because they can actually install a Google Analytics module themselves. If you want to download the whole package and host it yourself and maintain it yourself, you're more than welcome. And it's up to us to make sure that this is a stupid thing to do, because we will make it so easy for you to host with us. We will update your site with new features, help you out with any problems, that people are just very satisfied and stay with us. But that will be our main challenge for that SaaS version.
Well, speaking of Richard Stallman, I think some people would say that the start of the free software movement, which led to the open source movement, started because Stallman realized he was giving up some of his freedom to have convenience. And I think for a lot of people, they would rather have convenience than freedom. And I don't think there is anything wrong with that, per se. I've noticed that in the Drupal community that people tend to want to have maybe more of the freedom if they do happen, or if they do need to give up some of the convenience, if things are a little bit trickier or configuring a view they have to do themselves, they will oftentimes prefer to be able to tinker on their own. And that's kind of led me to this idea that I think a lot of people in the Drupal community that I've interacted with, people that have influenced me and my ideas about free software, it seems to me they view Drupal as a process, as a community working together, creating something, but it's a process. It's not necessarily a product for at least a subset of the community, if not a majority. And I think the case for products works very well for people who do just want to purchase those products. And I also would say that I think it's a good thing to have both of those as options, that the model that you're embarking on, Taco, where you're sharing the code, I think that's a key feature that everyone in the Drupal community wants to see, that contributions back to the community. I think the concerns come when we're taking part of the community and moving it over to something else, when we're when we're saying, all right, well, that Drupal.org community is going well, but I'm going to start a different community over here on GitHub, and it's going to maybe work a different way. But as long as there is code coming back to Drupal.org, I think there's been a long history of the community being okay with models like that, where people can get paid to work on something and then contribute that code back. So I think we really all agree on that point, that we want people to get paid to work, to be part of the community. We want to have lots of those kinds of opportunities. And I think I just wanted to make that point clear, that getting paid to work on Drupal, I think for most people in the community, is definitely something we all want to see. And so investment back into that is definitely something that I think a lot of people will appreciate.
Yeah, I'm very happy that you're saying this. I read your article, and I think you have a very strong opinion on this. But, you know, we don't differ so much in our views. We're both very passionate about Drupal. We're both very passionate about open source. And for me and our company, it's just searching a way of making sure we do have a sustainable model where we can actually make Drupal better, invest more in small features that people are used to currently on their smartphone, in their apps. They are expecting this from Drupal. So I do think that if we find a way that we, instead of spending a day on a feature, we can spend 5 days on it and then give it back to 10 or 100 sites, that we can push Drupal forward on this. But I absolutely agree that it can be dangerous in creating sub-communities. We all know the examples. I also work with SugarCRM. They completely moved away from open source to a corporate model, and their current open source model is so far behind that I'm not even sure if it's maintained at the moment. And that is definitely not something that I want to work towards too. I do think that we can have something that is not 100% open or 100% paid, but something in the middle. And for us, it will be an interesting journey, which we will share with the Drupal community to learn from and to improve upon. And we're more than welcome to this, more than open to discuss everything that, all the concerns that people have, but also the great ideas that people have on making their software better in the end.
Robert, you've been quiet for a while. Any final thoughts?
Well, I think that we benefit greatly from people like Matthew Tift and Taco Pozza, because they both are deeply passionate and concerned with where Drupal's going, and they're looking at solving different aspects of the problem space. Matthew's very concerned with preserving software freedom, and he has every good reason to be thinking about that, and so do you, and so do I. And Taco's got a bunch of people working for him, and he's thinking about, how do I keep these people paid and happy and focused on the task of making Drupal better? And I think that's also very important.
Matthew Tift?
Yeah, I think that there are lots of places where we agree, and that I definitely wanted to appreciate or mention that I appreciate what, you know, the products that people are trying to create, these efforts to try and find something that works with the Drupal community. And I think another interesting subject that you had brought up earlier, Taco, was when you mentioned the Drupal 8 Accelerate project, where that's a project that where you're paying people to develop parts of Drupal Core to help get Drupal 8 out the door. And that particular project, Holly Ross was talking about it. She's the executive director of the Drupal Association, and she talked about it as replacing an underground economy. I remember when she used that phrase, underground economy, it made me think that that's not something we want in our community. That's not something what a lot of us want in our community. We don't want to have images of smoky back rooms where people are making those deals. So I appreciate how you're working in the open, letting people know, talking about the subject. Certainly, this podcast has been, it came about because you had some ideas and you put them out there and we reacted to them. So I'm glad that there's a lot of overlap in how we want to approach this. And I do feel like I think the community has become big enough where there are multiple ways that people can be involved in it. And hopefully the corporate presence in Drupal, the growing corporate presence, does not scare away many individuals from working on core, and that we can, you know, both work on creating, you know, a good economic transactions as well as creating good human interactions. And I'm glad that we've had to have this interaction where we can talk about this. So thanks for having me on, guys.
Taco, before we hear your final thoughts, I just wanted to give you a chance. So the Yoast SEO module, when's that going to be out?
There's already a version for Drupal 7 and Drupal 8 out. Yoast just upgraded their JavaScript to version 1.1 last month for the WordPress community. So we're waiting results on that, and then we will port our modules to the 1.1 version. And that will be the time that we also will experiment with the premium module. And, you know, we will make sure that we give you all the data on this back. I think it will be a very interesting experiment. We're probably going to pay also for some bannering at Drupal.org. We also will give you full disclosure on click-through rates, because I think maybe this will be something that more people are considering. So, yeah, we want to see if this helps our module. We are currently at 1% of the MetaTech module market. They have about 100 more users. So we want to increase that number. And yeah, we just want to be open about experimenting like this. So we will definitely let everybody know when this module is available. It should be next month or so.
And you said Drupal Social was targeted for June?
Yes, there will be an alpha release in June. On Drupal.org, you can actually look on GitHub to see our progress. The URL is drupal.org/project/social. And you can follow everything we do on GitHub. And we'd love to hear your input also, for example, on the minimal viable product. So we have a roadmap, but we'd love to hear people's thoughts on, for example, should there be a friends feature or a follow feature? Should we have likes or smileys like in Facebook? So we'd love to hear everybody's input on that as well.
Great. Any final thoughts on the topic today?
Well, I'm just glad that this didn't became like a debate between good versus evil or something. And I think that indeed when the community is changing, and for me, that means that we have to look indeed what happened in history, but we also need to look ahead. And I think there will be a lot of challenges for Drupal ahead, but if we stay together as a community and we work on different models of making the software better, that will be the most important thing in the future to push Drupal forward. And we are happy to be a part of this movement and happy to experiment and share our thoughts on this as well with everybody.
Awesome. And you'll be coming to New Orleans here this summer, giving your session. It's called Selling Drupal Modules and Distributions.
Yeah.
We'll see you there.
Yes, talk to you then.
Awesome. Mike, you'll be at New Orleans.
Yep, I have a presentation talking about browser-based developer tools, tips and tricks. I am going to be hanging out in the booth with a couple different mats.
Matthew Tift, you'll be at the Lullabot booth as well.
I will. And I also have two talks at DrupalCon, one on the configuration system that I'm doing with Alex Pott, and another one on a new module that Lullabot has authored. For the accelerated mobile project that we did with Google. So AMP.
Great.
So you can hear my ideas and other subject there. Plus, I should also mention that a lot of the stuff that we talked about today, I have written about in detail, because I think a lot of these issues are quite complex. And I tried to explore some of the complexities in a few of the articles that you can find linked to on my lullabot.com user profile.
Yep, and we'll also link to that from the show notes at the bottom of the podcast page.
Super. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Taco. Thanks, Matt. And Robert.
Thanks, Matt.
And Robert and Jeff and Greg and everybody who was on today. Had a full house.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.